At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
All right, Sharknado 3, Oh Hell No, debuts on Sci-Fi Wednesday, July 22nd. And just like the first two, loaded with great cameos and amazing, breathtaking death by shark scenes, Ian Ziering, Tara Reid, back for the third movie. And guess who else is in it? Yeah, me, yours truly. I have a character, I got a name and everything. I'm Bruce, the ride attendant, and I actually had a lot of lines. I had some pretty cool interactions with Tara and Ian, and a great interaction with a shark on a roller coaster. You are not going to believe Jericho's. You've never seen him before. Do I put one of the sharks in the walls of Jericho, or do I get my head bitten off? I guess we're going to find out. I don't even know for sure. I got to watch it and see this Wednesday, July 22nd. Do I survive the killer shark attack? You're going to have to check it out and see. And does Ian Ziering survive? You're going to have to check that out and see. He's the star of Sharknado, the third installment, and he's here today. He's the star of Talk is Jericho. Super excited to have him on. He's going to tell us all about Sharknado 3, why he's in it, how he's in it, how it is filming a movie where you can't even see the sharks that you're supposed to be fighting. He'll also talk about Beverly Hills 90210. Remember that TV show he was on, that huge hit? Remember Steve Sanders? Yeah, and of course he's going to talk about being Finn Shepard on the Sharknado franchise movies. But listen, when those killer sharks hit your city, imagine if Sharknado actually comes true, you better be in the best shape of your life, man. You better get on that DDP yoga program now so you can take on the killer sharks yourself, okay? DDP yoga is a great fitness program, and you guys know I'm an avid user. I do DDP yoga almost daily, and I try and spread the word to everyone that I know, both professional, on the street, on the Twitter. I want you guys to try DDP yoga, okay? You've heard me talk about how DDP yoga has done save my career, both singing and wrestling, and DDP yoga is why I'm in the best shape of my life right now. I had some bad back problems, bad core issues, and DDP helped me get rid of those and become even bigger and better than ever, and I want you to try it because it can do the same for you. You'll be glad that you did. Okay, DDP design, DDP yoga to work for anyone and everyone, no matter what your age or fitness level is. Great option for those of you trying to get in shape and live a healthier lifestyle. Also a great choice if you're already in shape and trying to maintain. DDP makes it easy. He's got it all covered, especially if you get the max back. You get all the workouts on DVD. You get a grid chart to track your progress. You get a poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP yoga, recipes as well, so you can get that healthy eating plan. All the workouts on MP3 so you can exercise on the go. Do DDP yoga wherever you are, whenever you want. That's what I do. I'm telling you, I do it in hotel rooms. I do it in the back of the Fozzie tour bus. I do it in the dressing rooms at the WWE live events, wherever. Doesn't matter. I have them with me at all times, and I do them whenever I want. I go at my own pace. DDP always says that. You do it your way. This is your workout. You stop and start where you want. Beginner workouts, intermediate workouts, advanced workouts. You dictate your workout, okay? I want you to go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho right now. Take advantage of a special offer only available to the Sexy Beast listeners of TIJ. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. But this offer not going to last forever, all right? I want you to go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Take advantage of it now. Get in the best shape of your life. Protect yourself against the sharks and the flying water spout. And do it with DDP yoga and do it today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived, and it's Friday.
It's Aloha Friday. No work till Monday. It's Aloha Friday. No work till Monday.
And we're kicking off the weekend with the star of the Sharknado franchise, Ian Ziering. It's not Ian Ziering. Don't call him that. He's Finn Shepard fighting the Sharks with his ever-present chainsaw. And he was also Steve Sanders on 90210. Huge, huge star back in the early 90s as well. And wait till you hear about his 90210 edition. It's a great story. He's also pretty open about what it was like dealing with the fame and success during the show's heyday, and also dealing when it all ended, when the show was canceled, and how he had some lean times over the years, but now he's back bigger and better than ever. He's got crazy stories about Sharknado, why he got into it, how he wanted to get out of it when he first found out what the title of the movie was, and of course how it is acting and shooting a movie with the killer sharks that you don't even see while you're filming. I know all about it because, like I said, I was on set and I had some interaction with the sharks that weren't there, so I have no idea what I'm going to look like on screen with the sharks attacking me. There's a great picture in the new TV guide of the shark on the roller coaster coming after Bruce the ride attendant, but I'm telling you, man, it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm really, really excited to be a part of the Sharknado franchise. I got the offer and I was like, I'm doing it. Absolutely. And some people are like, why would you be in Sharknado? It's because it's become a pop culture phenomenon. It's the highest rated movie ever on Sci-Fi. Sharknado 2 was. And I expect Sharknado 3 to blow it out of the water. It's kind of the place to be, the cool place to be. But, you know, it's not my first sci-fi movie. I was in a movie called Android Apocalypse a few years ago. Definite classic. Won a Oscar in Luxembourg. You should go track it down and check it out. But as you know, Sci-Fi Channel always has a lot of fun movies on. A lot of them are god awful, but some of them are pretty fun, and just the concept of what the movies are all about as well is actually pretty funny. And the titles, like Sharknado, like, okay, we'll take sharks and stick them in a tornado and we'll call it Sharknado. Yeah, see. So I wanted to find out some other really bad sci-fi movie titles. So I went and Googled and I found theweek.com. 10 sci-fi channel movies just as ridiculous as Sharknado. Now, the reason why Sharknado works, might I add, and we talk about this later on, is because everyone plays it seriously. Like, I had a couple ideas for improv lines that I asked the director, Anthony Ferranti, if I could use, and he was like, no. The secret is you got to play it straight. This is not a comedy. This is like, imagine this is really happening. How would you react? You know, as preposterous as it may seem, still, if it was really happening, what would you do? And that's how we act accordingly. And that's why the movies work, because they're not, it's not like a horror comedy, which is my worst type of movies. They're playing it serious. They're playing it straight. And no matter how cheesy it might come off, it still works because you play it seriously. And that's what all of these movies on Sci-Fi are like this. None of them are like, how are ya type films. But, Sharknado is out. Interesting title. But I'm going through this list. Here's the Anonymous Rex is an actual movie where they have a raptor and a triceratops disguised as private investigators. That sounds pretty ricoculous. Then we got Sharktopus. That's a good one. Of course, obviously, half shark, half octopus, which is good. The toothed tentacled beast escapes and wreaks havoc on many bikini-clad beachgoers off the coast of Santa Monica, starring Academy Award nominee Eric Roberts. I'll have to check that out. Most ridiculous moment, a beautiful young beachgoer bungee jumps off a seaside cliff, only to be snatched out of midair by the Sharktopus. Okay. Let's see. Piranaconda. That's a good one. So I guess this would be a piranha cross with an anaconda. And it's the pseudo-sequel to Sharktopus. A pair of genetically engineered piranaconda hybrids going a killing spree on a small Hawaiian island after a scientist steals their leg. This starring Michael Madsen, Mr. Blonde from Reservoir Dogs. The most ridiculous moment, the piranaconda takes down an entire helicopter mid-flight. So this thing means business. Then we got Deep Shock. Not really a great title, but The submarine is attacked by an unknown assailant. The UN sends a team to investigate the incident, and the assailants are a bunch of conniving, super intelligent, giant electric eels looking to stir up trouble. All right. Dino Croc versus Super Gator. That one sounds good. A giant genetically, of course, always genetically engineered Super Gator breaks free of a research lab in Hawaii. Nearby, a different giant creature, the prehistoric Dino Croc, it's been captured by scientists, breaks free from the test lab. And what happens when an unstoppable force means an immovable object? Well, it's Dino Croc versus Super Gator. Most ridiculous movie here is a sleazy horror movie producer lures two models into the hot tub, and the monster shows up and swallows them in a moment of blood-soaked glory. All right. What do you think about all these movies, Ash the Fish Expert? Quick cameo.
Megapython versus Gatoroid.
Okay, and tell us who stars in that one.
80s pop star Debbie Gibson and Tiffany Starr in the apocalyptic creature feature in which experimental anabolic steroid-pumped dead chickens are fed to gators in the Everglades to combat the growing problem of large, aggressive pythons. Fast forward a few months when all-out war has begun between the giant pythons and the mutant gators.
All right, and what's the most ridiculous moment from Megapython versus Gatoroid?
Two hunters come face to face with a megapython. As the large serpent swallows one of the dim-witted hunters, the other stares it down, accepting the grisly fate that's about to come, when his buddy sets off a sacrificial grenade in Snake's belly and blows it up. When the surviving hunter immediately cracks open a beer to toast his noble friend, a giant gator crushes him.
Sounds, what do you think? Are you going to watch this one? Would you give this one, what kind of a rating would you give it, do you think? Out of 10?
I'd give it a whopping 0.1 stars.
0.1 stars. All right. Well, Megapython versus Gatoroid, as we continue. Dino Shark. The global warming caused the glacier containing a baby prehistoric era shark to be knocked loose, thus freeing the titular creature. The dino shark grows up and turns the waters of a Mexican coastal resort into his new feeding grounds. Seems like there's a real pattern here, and the most ridiculous moment of this one is the dino shark devours a bunch of surfers in mid-surf. So, a few more to go here. Frankenfish.
We got the
Frankenfish. Based on Maryland's real-life snakehead fish incident in 2002, Frankenfish pits several scientists against a school of man-eating, genetically engineered snakehead fish in the bayou. Most ridiculous moment, a cocky fisherman baits for a Frankenfish who killed his brother, only to have it immediately jump on the dock and bite his leg. Okay, a fisherman manages to blow its brains out with a shotgun, but moments later, another Frankenfish jumps into the water and bites his head off. So, here's another good one, the Jersey Shore shark attack. That's interesting. Cross-pollinated satire of MTV's Jersey Shore gets attacked by the sharks. And the most ridiculous moment, Joey Fatone gets eaten by a shark. And the final bad movie, similar to Sharknado, is Hammerhead Shark Frenzy. A mad scientist attempts to cure his cancer-ridden son by fusing his DNA with the DNA of a hammerhead shark. It turns his son into a half-human, half-hammerhead shark who goes on a killing spree. The most ridiculous moment? Every
single second of it.
So there you go. There's some movies that you guys can watch in preparation for Sharknado 3, Oh Hell No. And it's going to be a quite the huge, huge hit. And it's going to be quite a huge hit today as Ian Ziering, the star of Sharknado, guests here on Talk is Jericho. And I'm sure.
No. I'm here with Chris Jericho. Are you kidding? I'm humbled in your company, man.
At the NBC Press Day, which is funny because I saw you at the last NBC Press Day, and we just kind of crossed each other. Oh, what's up, dude? How you doing? So much going on, though, because of like the phenomenon known as Sharknado.
Sharknado 3.
Which is so crazy to think about how this has become so ridiculously big. Because, you know, I've done sci-fi movies before, and they always have the weird names and the weird creatures, and they're kind of, you know, they're kitschy, and they're, you know, I guess cheesy would be the word for it.
Absolutely.
And, you know what I mean? But this one, for whatever reason, just went through the roof.
It's really a phenomenon. There's really no explanation for it. I don't know what the secret sauce is. I wish I did. I'd be producing these movies. But for whatever reason, it's really captured the hearts and imagination of not just science fiction fans, but mainstream media. Yeah, it's not just
iconic or whatever it might be.
It's hard to explain, you know. It's an action adventure science fiction movie, but it's also a family movie.
Right.
It's a story about a man who goes to extraordinary lengths to make sure his family is safe. Mm-hmm. And he's confronted with these Sharknados, and really rises to the level necessary to do what it takes to make sure they're safe. And in the meantime, saves the whole city and the world, seemingly. It's perfect.
It gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we met on set. I did the little cameo part in Chardonnay. And the thing about it is we all play it straight.
Yeah.
And that's why it works. It's not like, you know, oh, there's a shark coming. What are you going to do? It's like you are playing it like as if there really is like an earthquake or something like that. And that helps it work, too.
Well, that's a necessary component to helping the audience suspend disbelief. Mm-hmm. If you give in to the cheesiness and don't act naturally in this imaginary circumstance, then the audience isn't going to buy it. Then it's like other schlock movie that's out there where the actors are phoning it in. But, you know, we're all very sure to make sure everyone raises to the level necessary to bring an authentic reaction to a cataclysmic event. You know, this is a Sharknado, and everyone's in on the joke except the people in the movie. Mm-hmm. And that's why people are able to suspend disbelief, to sit back and enjoy it as an entertainment vehicle, and then drive it for an hour and a half and then let it go. Because it is so preposterous, because it is so ridiculous, but because it's not ridiculous for the people that are within involved. The context right. of the movie.
It's not like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
So right, there's enough separation. Yeah. But if everyone's laughing on both sides of the camera, then you lose your ability to buy into it.
It doesn't work. Yeah. And we were talking about how big it's become. Sharknado 2 did the highest rating in sci-fi history for a movie or for anything.
It's up there. It set records. 1 billion Twitter impressions. I mean, how does that happen?
And now 3 has got so much anticipation. Like today, I was talking about Tough Enough, but then other people just all they want to talk about is Sharknado.
Well, they know you're in it.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So many people.
Well, you know, the sci-fi fans are the most supportive fans in all of entertainment, I believe. Mm-hmm. Maybe second only to the wrestling fans that are out there.
That's true. Yeah.
But the sci-fi fans are also very like-minded and very tech-savvy, so they're all connected on various social media platforms. Mm-hmm. And when one person finds something that's exciting or different, starts chatting about it, well, then there's this domino effect that takes place, and the excitement grows exponentially, not just here in the United States, but globally. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, what resonates here is heard in Japan. Or Australia, or Europe, or South America. So there's global anticipation for a movie that a TV movie, by the way, that is unheard of. Mm-hmm. With Sharknado, the original Sharknado, you know, I had some trepidation in doing this movie to begin with because it, you know, there were a lot of holes in the script that were left to be filled by visual effects. And with a scant budget, you can't be sure if they're going to really support your actions with plausible...
Would you think you get a call from your agent saying, hey, I got...
I read it, and I thought it was a piece of junk. I thought, that this is never going to see the light of day. Certainly wasn't going to be something that would propel my career. I was actually thinking it would be something that would be detrimental.
And why did you do it?
Because I needed to make insurance, have my health insurance. You know what? My wife was 6 months pregnant, and I get my health insurance from my union, Screen Actors Guild. And every January it resets. I need to make so much every year to qualify.
That much work.
Yeah. And this movie would have made the quota just barely. And my wife said, look, you need to go to work. You need to get that health insurance. And, you know, it was a very stark realization that now that I'm a husband and a father, I'm also a provider. And, you know, that's a job where failure is not an option. Mm-hmm. So when failure is not an option, you do whatever it takes to be successful. And I really felt like I was taking one for the team. Mm-hmm. I did it. I did the movie begrudgingly because I didn't trust the director. I didn't know him. Mm-hmm. I didn't trust the production company because I didn't know them. And I certainly didn't trust the visual effects artist because not only did I not know them, but I knew that they didn't have money to really get all the bells and whistles. This wasn't going to be James Cameron quality special effects. I was thinking this is going to be more Sid and Marty Croft level, right. Sleestaks and Sigmund and the Sea Monster and Witchy Boot. Right, yeah. Land of the Lost kind of stuff. And I was fearful, you know. But then after I saw it, I was like, oh, okay. Well, that move where I jumped, they actually put a shark in there that wasn't a guppy. It was a big enough shark that made my, at the time, my action looked like a plausible reaction. So it kind of built trust. And when we did Sharknado 2, because I had this trust, knowing what that they were capable of and that they would not make me look foolish if I dove out of the way or looked up and made a scary face, that they would substantiate that reaction with a graphic that made it a plausible reaction. Mm-hmm. So now in Sharknado 3... in speaking with the VX artists, they thanked me for giving them something to work with. So now I know that they look for opportunities, and I would share that with our guest stars, our cameo artists that would come in, and you know, if they would get taken out by a shark, I'd say, look, just don't fall back, because then they're just going to have the shark take you out. But if you fight a little bit and swing your head left to right a little bit, well, then you're going to get thrashed, and it's going to be a much more interesting kill.
We were on top of the roller coaster.
Yeah.
Gave me that advice.
I said,
the
dude,
more you move,
the
better it will look.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're a big dude, so it's going to be formidable. You know, they'll probably take you out in a way. I mean, if you die, I don't want to give out any story points.
Maybe
you could. You could. When we worked with in LA, I worked with Rick Fox, basketball player.
Yeah.
And he's a big guy.
Yeah.
And he plays one of the president's security guards. And I said, Rick, now don't just fall out of frame. I said, fight back. And you may think you're doing something ridiculous, but know and trust me when I tell you that whatever you do, they're going to make it a realistic reaction. So take a couple punches, swing, dodge, whatever you do, just don't fall out of frame. So when I saw his take, when I saw him do it, he's throwing a left and a right and an elbow, and he's thrashing, and then he falls out of frame. I'm like, that's awesome. That's going to be a beautiful kill.
Right, a beautiful kill.
I mean, so to speak, within the context of the movie, and that's what the viewers look for. They know it's ridiculous. They know it's not realistic. Uh-huh. Most of them. No, it's not realistic. But it's just fun, you know, and it adds a level of excitement, not just for the viewers, but for the people that come in and do a little guest spot. You know, they want it to be as good as possible as well. So
it's become kind of one of the themes that started in 2 and went to 3, where now it's like, how many cameos?
Oh my gosh.
Can you see in here?
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if we do a 4 that every person on screen is recognizable from something, for doing something at some capacity, because it's just fun.
You're almost looking like every single person is a cameo, like a star. Because that's why, like, I was watching too, and I was like, I was gonna start looking. Maybe is that somebody that I just don't know them? And in chat, it was like either a social media person or someone that was on Pinterest that had a huge following.
Right, right.
Whatever.
Yeah, we've got a couple of those people
so many,
that have
right? yeah.
vloggers who have. Yeah. Crazy amounts of followers, and you know, we've learned that social media is very impactful. Mm-hmm. And if these people are willing to give of their time and participate in this, you know, they're going to write about it, and they're going to get their minions, so to speak, to see the movie, and it just grows, and it just adds another layer of fun.
I had it wasn't even an audition, it was a screen test. I was down to the wire to get this gig. I ended up not getting it, but they're like, they need you to do this screen test in LA, in Burbank, on the studio on Tuesday. And I got the call to do Sharknado. They needed me Monday, Tuesday. And I told my agent, like, I'm doing Sharknado, but you've got this screen test. They needed me there for a rehearsal thing. And I said, I can get out of there at noon and be at Burbank that night for the rest of it. What if you miss the flight? I don't care. I'm doing Sharknado.
Really?
Because this is real. It's an offer. It's real. And it's going to be huge.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, it worked out good.
And you're very recognizable in this. I mean, you're working with Tara and I. We're
absolutely
on a top of a roller coaster.
Yeah. I had a great part. I had a name.
Yeah.
Bruce the Rider. Right.
Right. Not everyone has a character name.
Exactly, you know. But I mean, who were some of the cameos that showed up that you were like, because there were some people that I was like, oh my gosh. Kim Richards, like I was so obsessed with her when I was a kid.
Kim Richards shows up. We had, everyone was. Kim's such a so cute.
Yeah.
She's still a beautiful woman. Like I said, Rick Fox. We had, who did we have? We had Lou Ferrigno showed up. Jackie Collins showed up.
I loved him too when Judd Hirsch was actually the tax
collector. Right. Oh, it was so perfect. Bo Derek plays Tara's mom. David Hasselhoff plays my dad. Penn and Teller, all of a sudden, I'm like, what? That's Penn and Teller. You know, and I don't know who they get because they're actively seeking recognizable people all through production. And they all of a sudden, oh, we got this person here. They're going to do this part.
So you just show up with them and say, hey, what's going on?
And then quite often the narrative would have to change because these people need some creative, something to say. They're just not going to stand there and be taken out.
Because you're shooting this very quickly, too. I think you told me it was like a three-week shoot.
If that. We 15, 16 days. Yeah.
So much post-production, too, though, because like you said, the effects, they're not too bad. Man.
No,
they're actually really good.
They really are. And every year they get better because the technology improves. Mm-hmm. And what was astonishing 10 years ago, well, the license to get that technology is a lot cheaper now because now there's something 10 times better than that. I mean, if you've seen what's out there now, San Andreas or Jurassic Park, it's seamless. Mm-hmm. It is as realistic as the actors. When you see these dinosaurs walking around, the detail is as precise and as exact as every whisker on Chris Pratt's face. That technology is, you know, cutting edge. Well, what's cutting edge today in 10 years is going to be antiquated.
Sure.
But it's still great stuff. Mm-hmm. That's where these lower budget films are able to bump up their game because all of a sudden now that technology, that license to use that technology is within their grasp. Yeah. So every year,
it's cheaper to make it look better.
It's cheaper.
Was it hard at first to, like you mentioned, to perform, say, in the green screen, just like miming, pantomime?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was the trust factor. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know Anthony. Anthony C. Ferrante is our director, and
he's
telling me to do all these crazy things, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's going to be so stupid. But you know what? I'm a professional. They hired me. I'm here to do a job. I did it, but I didn't have high hopes for the outcome. And that's really was the challenge in accepting what they were asking me to do because I had no perspective of what they were capable of producing. So it was purely a leap of faith.
Mm-hmm. Was it called Sharknado when you got the script?
No, it was called Dark Skies, which oddly enough, there was another movie that came out with Kerry Russell that was called Dark Skies. But I figured, oh, this is a TV movie. Maybe it doesn't matter. Whatever. If it was titled Sharknado when I first read it, I probably never would have even opened it up. So ridiculous. But after, 4 or 5 days of filming Sharknado, the director comes on set and lets us know that they're titling this movie Sharknado. I said, Sharknado? Really? Come on. I thought it was Dark Skies. They said, no, that was just the working title. It's going to be Sharknado. Dead silence. I'm looking at Tara, and she's looking at me. We're thinking, we're never going to work again. I get on the phone with my agent. You got to get me off this movie. And he's like, don't worry. It'll go straight to DVD. No one's going to see it. Look, you're going to make your insurance. Just don't worry. Just go cash the check. You'll be fine. And I'm dying. I go back. I'm like, really? How about Great White Skies? I just pulled that out of my hat, but it kind of would be a little bit more fitting. Anything's better than Sharknado.
Right.
They went with Sharknado. I'm like, oh, God. I just figured it was another nail in my coffin. Exactly. And there it became Sharknado.
Do you think that they did that on purpose? Like, there's no one's going to accept this if it's called Sharknado. We better give it a gimmick name, or do you think they just hadn't figured it out by then?
They haven't figured it out. They didn't. They're all flying by the seat of their pants. If you have seen the lineup that Sci-Fi has of movies, it's pretty much in line.
Sure.
Ghost Shark, Mega Shark meets octo shark. It's like this
scorpion antula. It's like a half scorpion, half tarantula.
Lavalantula.
That's what it is.
Lavalantula is going is a big another big summer movie. They're hoping it will reach the levels that Sharknado did. It's with Steve Guttenberg.
Kind of in the same vein as hiring Ian Ziering.
Well, it you know Steve passed on Sharknado.
Did he really? When did you find that out?
Pretty quickly. I figured if they offered me this and we were shooting, you know, the next week, then somebody must have passed on this.
Exactly.
You know, they've right. got they've
you
got
the first choice.
Right. I think Kevin Dillon also passed on it. But
now those guys are wishing that they hadn't done that for sure, right?
Yeah, I don't know what you know, they all have their own things going and I would have passed on
but
it
like
too.
You said, yeah, if you didn't have,
I wasn't blaming them.
Support.
I would have passed on it too.
And so when did you realize that? Like, was it a big hit right off the bat? The first Sharknado.
Instantly, we had the editor of Fangora magazine come and do a cameo. No one knew what cameos were. This Anthony, the director, had. Anthony used to write for Fangora magazine, so his friend, the editor, he invited him over, and then there was a little story in Fangora, and that started the buzz, that started the excitement. And there was built-in anticipation because all the sci-fi fans that were talking about it, there was just great expectation for this crazy movie with sharks and tornadoes, mm-hmm. and it delivered. Luckily, it delivered. It had all the right components in it. And what they are exactly, I don't know. But it had all the right components to be a wildly successful movie. And because it was so popular, even mainstream entertainment got involved. Mia Farrow was watching this crazy movie and started tweeting about it.
That's great.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg was tweeting about it. Best movies ever seen. This is so ridiculous. I can't believe it. Matt Damon. You know, all these people, you know, these from major motion picture backgrounds.
A-list stars.
Yeah, where, you know, just proved that they enjoy a good cheesy sci-fi movie just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
And it just started to, the word of mouth was viral.
You know, I think a lot probably had to do with the name. You know, you hear Sharknado and it's like that's intriguing.
What the hell?
Right. Dark Skies, or for example... It's pretty nondescript.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty lame.
It doesn't have that allure, but Sharknado.
Yes.
And now that you know what it is, it's kind of hard to not watch it because it's so ridiculous. It's sharks and tornadoes, and this is the third one. What the heck are they doing?
Talking about a
must be movie. Something if they've done three, so it's become, you know,
like you
topics
said,
of water coolers.
If it becomes, I mean, I'm sure there'll be a four, you're going to get guys like Mark Wahlberg and Matt Damon probably calling up saying, put me in this movie. You know,
they all have a sense of humor.
Sure.
I'd like to see Schwarzenegger show up. Stallone.
You're talking about 4 million. I bet you 3 will be even more. 5 million. That's a lot of people. That's more than some that would go to a movie theater and see some of those movies.
Oh, about. Yeah.
You know, that's a big draw.
What's amazing is that if this was a feature film, it would do, you know, 50, 60, 70 million dollars opening weekend.
And who's to say that's not the next thing, right?
It'd be great.
Yeah.
But I would be afraid that if they invested too much money into the movie, that it would change the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, keeping the budget down puts some constraints on production. And the quality and the content also suffers when you don't have the mm-hmm. high dollars. Mm-hmm. But I think that where it suffers is also where it gains, because it lends itself to the campy, kitschy nature of the movie. We didn't have a cast of thousands in our background. We had like 15, 20 people.
Yeah.
And we had to use them all the time. So in one scene, this guy might be towards the front of the camera screaming. And then in the next scene, we need somebody in the background. We would change his shirt and put him in the background. You may see someone who has their legs chewed off in a previous scene running wildly through a following scene. You know, look closely. They're out there.
Yeah.
But that's just the way, you know, that's the way it's
that's
done.
That's part of the charm of the movie.
But that charm has only come because of the low-budget nature, because there's not enough movies.
Right.
So therein lies the result.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the money for this high-budget, flawless, seamless visual effect. So you do the best you can. But the best you can is just good enough to make it different and awesome in its own right.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Sitting across from Ian Ziering, and you're talking about how you thought Sharknado was another nail in the coffin of your career, but here you are now, a legitimate action star, a leading man in a very popular, successful franchise. I mean, it just proves in showbiz, you never know what's going to take and what's not.
You know, you have to look at every opportunity as a golden egg.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought 90210. After I saw the pilot, I figured I'd be looking for a job really quickly. So clearly, I'm no judge of quality content. Because two of the biggest things on my resume, I thought...
Legitimate American pop culture iconic
right, shows. Globally successful stuff. I just didn't think we were going to go the distance. And look what's happened. So, you know, now I'm at the point in my career where, you know, I look at everything differently. I look at it first and foremost as, will I be able to provide for my family?
Mm-hmm.
And will I have fun doing it? And I don't really care anymore if it's not what I think is great or if I think it stinks. It's more about am I having fun, mm-hmm. and can I provide for my family? Because I think, you know, my fans have a huge penchant for entertainment and have a tremendous amount of allowance for forgiveness if I do something really ridiculous. Mm-hmm. They kind of expect it now from me. You know, I did a video for Angry Birds, a little viral video where they came and it's a company from Finland, Rovio, and they came and they pitched me and my manager. They want to make me big in Japan. So we're like, yeah, let's do it. But there's a loss in translation. What I thought was big in Japan, they said pig in Japan. And I'm showing up at Yubashi intersection dressed as an Angry Birds pig.
They got you again.
They got me again.
And the dark skies of Sharknado, big in Japan, and big in Japan.
Yeah, so, but it's fun. And you know what? I've never had too much fun yet, so I'm
see,
open to it.
To longevity, I had William Shatner on the show, and he said he never turns down anything. He said he'll do it because he never knows. Priceline, like who the hell... You know, all of these things. Captain Kirk, God. Same thing. He said, Star Trek, I never expected anything. Never turn anything down because you just never know where it's going to lead. You know, advice from one of the greats. You know?
When I was a little kid, I started acting when I was 12 years old. And I lived in New Jersey, so my mom would bring me in for auditions. And there was a commercial audition. I forget what it was for, but it was ridiculous. It was like some robot toy, and they wanted me to dress like a robot kind of thing. And I just thought how my classmates would really barbecue me if I dressed like a robot and did this kind of stupidness, whatever. So I said, Mom, I'm not doing it. I don't want to go in. And my mom said, Ian, look, just get it. And then you could turn it down.
Mm-hmm.
Just get it first and then worry about it. So I went into New York. And I read the copy, and it really wasn't all that bad. It was kind of funny. And I got it. And she said, well, you're going to turn it down? And I was like, no, let's go do it. So I kind of learned a lesson. You know, just don't prejudge something from other situations and similar circumstances. Everything has to be judged on its own merits.
Mm-hmm.
When I was approached to do Dancing with the Stars, at first, the first season they came to me, I'm like, no, I'm an actor. What is this? This is reality? No. Second season they approached me, and no. And the third season, Mario Lopez just busted it out and blew up from it. And so it kind of made me look at it. And then the fourth season they asked me, and I did it. And I looked at it as an opportunity to learn a new skill, to be in prime time, which is so valuable, to stay topical in this industry, and to have fun. And because Dancing with the Stars was a variety-type show, it wasn't your typical reality show where they try to make you the butt of the joke.
Mm-hmm. It's the same as Sharknado. They want to play it straight.
Yeah.
They don't have hacks on there.
No. We're not playing it for the joke.
Mm-hmm.
With Dancing with the Stars, it was an opportunity to be the thrust of the entertainment, and I like that. Shortly after that, I was asked if I would consider screen testing for The Price is Right when Bob Barker retired. And my knee-jerk reaction was, no, that's ridiculous. But again, my friend's words said came to me and said, look, don't prejudge from similar circumstances and prior experiences. Look at the opportunity for what it is and do the pros and cons. So I looked at the Price is Right. Shoots 42 days out of the year. Two shows a day. It's, you know, the contract was multi-million dollar contract.
Yes. Yeah.
So I said, wow, you know what? I'd be hosting a party twice a day for 4 days a week for 42 days a year. I'd make ridiculous amounts of money. And with that money, I could staff up iMan Productions and make my own vehicles,
yeah,
make my own entertainment. I could employ a lot of people. There's a lot of good I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I stopped seeing anything negative about hosting The yeah. Price is Right. So I said, you know what? Yeah, I'd screen test for it. I would love to. The more I thought about it, I was like, oh my God, I hope I get it.
It'd be
so fun.
Yeah.
And it went to Drew Carey, and Drew's doing a great job with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got a long road in front of me. If opportunities similar to that came up again, I would take a look at it, and I wouldn't prejudge.
Let me ask you this. Because what I was talking about before was the screen test I had was for America's Funniest Home Videos. And Alfonso Ribeiro ended up getting it. And I was the same as you, like right to the wire.
Wait a second. Is Tom Bergeron no longer doing that?
He's retiring after this year.
Right.
Alfonso's the new guy.
Right.
And it was the same as like you said. Like, yeah, America's Funniest Videos. Like, really? And then as we move on in the process, you're like, I really hope I get this. And then you don't get it. It's a letdown. You've been in show business a long time. You have to let that go. But it's hard.
You can't. I process rejection very quickly. I don't dwell on it. I would never have made it 38 years in this industry if I was beaten by rejection, because you can't be the guy every time. All I can control is what I bring to the audition.
Mm-hmm.
From there, it's out of my hands. Someone else has dominion over me in terms of choosing who's going to get the part. And I understand I can't be the guy every time. They may want someone dark hair. They may want someone ethnic. They may want someone taller. They want shorter. I might not work for whatever reason. But if I can go into an audition and do the best I can and accomplish what I set out to do, then I take that away as a victory, because I know I can't be the guy every time.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can go in there and accomplish what I set out to do and not screw up or mess up my lines in the audition and impress the casting director, well, I'm okay with that. That's my victory.
Yeah.
And I know there's 50 other guys behind me waiting for the same role, and somebody might be more right for it.
Mm-hmm.
Alfonso's a great guy. Maybe they wanted someone. Maybe they wanted him.
Right.
It's not necessarily personal. They're going to do what's best for production every time. If they thought he was a better fit, then they're going to go with him.
Sure.
If they thought you were a better fit, they would have gone with you, and he would have had those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But Alfonso has been in the industry a long time. I was on Broadway when he was the tap dance kid on Broadway. You know,
you did Broadway?
Yeah.
Wow. What years when you were a kid?
1979. I did Richard Rodgers' last musical, I Remember Mama. Yeah.
So you have been in the biz a long, long time.
Long time. Started in 1976.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, too, Beverly Hills. And that's something that, I mean, once again, huge, huge, huge show. How was that audition for you? Because I was going to say, was that your first thing? But obviously you've been working since 76, and that was about 89 or so, right?
I was 26 years old.
Mm-hmm. You really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was finished with college. I was working on a soap opera. Soap opera ended, and I hadn't had a job in about 18 months. I was getting kind of desperate, because from the soap opera, I had bought a condo in New Jersey, and I had some roommates, but I was starting to see the bottom of the barrel. I hadn't worked, and, you know, life's expensive. Not that I lived, you know, too lavishly.
Job. Yeah.
I needed to work, and it had been 18 months, and I was kind of worried. I had a conversation with my dad, and my father said, look, I'll give you $1,500 a month for 2 years, and then I can't do it anymore. So my father was willing to give me $18,000 a year to support me while I still pursued my acting career, but the caveat was that I had to have a plan B. The acting gig didn't work out. So I started working in a fish tank store because I liked fish tanks, and I thought maybe I could learn importing and exporting, and was thinking more of the lifestyle. That would be pretty cool, going to tropical shores, whatever. But acting was always my passion, and I never gave it up. And you know, as I was becoming more and more desperate, my brother, who's in advertising specialties, I went to him and I said, you need to make me up like a little podiatrist magnet with a foot that says, now that I got my foot in the door, Ian Ziering, and then my agent's name, so when I go into an audition, I could leave it on a cabinet for them to find later or whatever. Yeah. And that worked out pretty well. You know, I'd get some callbacks from that.
And people would just find it and go,
yo, look at this. Clever. Yeah, clever.
I like this kid.
And then I get this audition for The Class of Beverly Hills.
Well, that's what it was originally called?
Yeah. And living in New Jersey before fax machines and computers, I had to drive into the city to get the script, and it was on Lexington Avenue. And again,
just think about that. You had to drive in to pick up the script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How crazy today's. But back then, that's what you did. And parked the car and I walked. I remember walking up a flight of stairs to this big office that was pretty much empty and had a stack of scripts and a legal pad to sign in. And there was a sign that said, sign in and take a script. I said, hello, is anyone here? Some woman in the back said, yeah, just take a script and leave your name. So I'm looking at about 50 scripts. I'm looking at the blank sign-in sheet, and I'm thinking, God, all these scripts, these are all potential Steve Sanders. And knowing that they were going to be putting me on film the next day for the director, so I took the pen and I signed in. I wrote Ben Dover, and I took all the scripts. I walked out of that office with a stack of scripts from my fingertips tucked under my neck, and I'm running down Lexington Avenue just waiting for someone to grab me.
Stop. Script stealer!
Script stealer! And I took all the scripts.
So that no one else could read for this part.
Well, they would read for the part, but they wouldn't have a whole... Threw a monkey wrench into the whatever. My audition was at like 10 o'clock the next morning. So I got home and I tore the script apart and started workshopping it with a friend of mine, another actor, and just worked on my three scenes and worked on them and worked on them and dialed them in to the point where I was comfortable, and went into my audition the next morning. And I got there and everyone was looking for sides for the scene to see, because they didn't get a script. And of course I asked for sides too.
There's no scripts here yesterday.
Yeah. And
actually, I love the fact that you actually signed a name too. Like, instead of just stealing them, running away.
Oh, I signed Bend Over. And did my three scenes and accomplished what I had set out to in that audition, and tried to forget about it because I felt the victory was in just a good audition. Mm-hmm. And a couple days later, I get a call that they wanted to screen test me. I did a good job. They wanted to bring me out to California. So I was very excited about that. And they fly me out to California, and I'm on a plane with two other actors, a boy and a girl. They were reading for Brenda and Brandon. And we get to California, and they put me up at the Hyatt on Sunset. I get into the city. I get into L.A. I get to the hotel about 4, 4.30, and I'm sitting in my hotel room. And I didn't have a car, so I was pretty much landlocked. And I'm watching Cops, Bad Boys. I'm watching Cops, and this rocker beat up his girlfriend, and she's like wrapped in the bed sheets and the bedspread, and she's holding herself while the cops are interviewing. I'm looking at the bedspread, and I realize that's this hotel. I'm sitting in the hotel, so it's just right. It was just weird.
Where cops happen. Is it your first time in LA?
No, I'd been there before, but it was just weird.
Yeah.
So
weird memory.
Yeah, it's like. Weird. Yeah. So the next morning I wake up and I get picked up and we go to the Fox studios, and I made sure I put some Vaseline on my gums, because when I get nervous or have any anxiety, my mouth dries out, and I didn't want my lip to hang on my gum.
Yeah.
You know, the Jim Carrey, yeah. Fire Marshal. Yeah. I didn't want this to happen. So I learned a trick. I remember seeing some beauty queen saying, oh, she puts Vaseline on her lips, on her gums. So
good trick,
yeah. Oh, it's great, and it works flawlessly. It's just perfect. So I like put some Vaseline on my gums, and I went to the audition, and I'm sitting there, and in the hallway in the executive offices, they have all the actors that are auditioning. I remember seeing Brian Greene there, and there's a blonde gentleman also reading for Steve Sanders. He's bigger than I am. There's a dark-haired kid who's also reading, a little smaller than me. The dark-haired kid sitting next to me is saying his lines a little too loud next to me. And I'm like, hey, buddy, why don't you shut up? You know, I don't want to hear that. It's in my head. I don't need you to screw what I got up going on. So, hey, keep it to yourself. And then the big blonde guy next to me, he's like down the hallway doing push-ups. And I'm just trying to breathe, not let my heart race so I could give, you know, my audition. The dark-haired kid goes in, and I'm just outside the door. So I hear them laughing. I hear a lot of people laughing. And he's in there for an inordinate amount of time. So I'm thinking, oh, God, he's killing it in there. And I'm dying because there's a mind game to this whole thing.
Sure thing, man. Absolutely.
But the door opens and he comes out and he's got this look on his face like he doesn't know if he had brain surgery or not. So I knew he wasn't confident. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking maybe they were laughing at him rather than with him. Maybe it was a courtesy laugh.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, fake Hollywood.
Iron, are you ready? The casting director says, and I stand up and I walk in, and the room is packed. Barry Diller, I see.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Barry Diller is probably the head of the network.
Head of the network, yeah. At the time. I see Aaron Spelling sitting there.
Wow.
I see some of the other industry icons from Fox that I remember seeing in the trade papers. And, you know, Darren Star was in there, and people were sitting on the backs of sofas and on the sofas, and there were 18 people in this room. And
so you're very far in the process.
Yeah, this is the screen test. So the casting director says to me, Iron, are you ready? And I said, yeah, I'm ready. But then I look at everyone. I said, I want to make sure you're all ready to pay attention because there's going to be a quiz after this. And that stupid comment made everybody say, you know, it kind of broke the ice for me.
Of course.
But it was so, I was nervous. I said something ridiculous, but it kind of broke the ice. And my mouth watered. I'm like, I feel relaxed now. Everyone, you know, we're on the same page. I'm crazy. So I gave my three scenes, got my laughs where I needed to. They weren't laughing like the first kid, but I got the right laughs, set out and accomplished what I'd set out to do. And Aaron Spelling stood up and shook my hand. I thanks so much for coming out here. Really. And I'm thinking, kiss of death. Thanks so much for coming. Don't let the door hit you in a tush on the way out. I'm like dying. So, I said, oh, well, thanks so much. I really love the character. The project's going to be great. If I'm not involved, I still wish you all the best of luck with it and take care. And I walked out. And as I walked out, I passed the big blonde guy, and he looks at me and says, how'd it go? And with all the luster I could manage, I blazed him a smile and got in his face. I said, went great! Just to screw with his head a little bit.
Yeah.
And he went in right after that. So that night, I get back to the hotel. The other two actors I had flown out heard that they didn't get it. Mm. But my agent was in New York City, and New York's office had closed by that time.
Right.
So the next morning, I get a call, and it's my agent, Steve, and he says, how you doing? I said, I'm doing fine. What do we know? Did I get it? He said, well, hold on. How do you think you did? I said, Steve, I think I did pretty good. How? I didn't get it, did I? Because I could tell. He would tell me immediately.
Yeah.
He says, well, Ian, they thought you did a great job. You know, again, the kiss of death. Here it comes. He's buttering me up before he cuts my neck. He says, you did a great job, and you got it. I got it? He says, yeah, you got it. You booked it. Congratulations.
Wow.
And I, like, did a backflip off the bed, and I was so excited. I called up my parents, and my mom was squealing with joy. It was a moment that changed my life.
Great moment, right? And then you mentioned how when the pilot came out, you didn't think it was going to last.
Yeah.
And then once again, just goes on and becomes a huge, huge,
yeah,
huge hit.
Yeah.
How was that at that time? Because everybody was all about Beverly Hills. I mean, you guys were rock stars.
Oh, yeah. You know, I looked at it as a job. I never really got caught up in the celebrity aspect of it. You know, I'd been working for a long time. I was 12 years old. I was already in the business for 12 years at this time. And, you know, Jason Priestley and Luke Perry, and, you know, they were experiencing this huge stardom. But to me, if it wasn't me, I was glad it was someone because we were all in tow with them. It just propelled the show. And I knew where I was in the pecking order, and I was fine with that. I had a job as an actor. You just have to be grateful for a job.
Yeah.
So I did whatever they asked of me. I never quit the show. I never missed a day of work in 10 years.
You did every episode, right?
I was on every episode. You know, don't get off the boat if it's not sinking.
Right.
You know, you never know when you're going to get an opportunity like this. Best time of my life. Really, just amazing experience. I traveled the world. I was welcomed wherever I'd gone. I was able to make my parents proud of me. That was the best. Just in making my, I would live to make my parents proud of me. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom would call me after every show, "Oh, Ian, that was such a good scene," or whatever, and it would tickle me so.
I used to, we used to watch it with my roommate back when I was in Calgary.
Yeah.
And I used to take my bass guitar out, like start out and play the theme song to bass, then we'd watch the show.
Really?
Yeah, so many classic moments. I mean,
it's great.
What was it about the show that made it so popular, in your opinion?
It was an original idea, original concept at the time, to have a young adult ensemble cast deal with substantive issues that were very topical. Mm-hmm. And it really resonated with young adults, not just here, but all over. You know, we were in 142 countries around the world, and whether we were dubbed or subtitled in, I would hear from people wherever I would go that they were able to relate. Everyone either knew a Steve Sanders in their high school or was like him. And there was always like the Kelly Taylor, and there was always the hot chick, you know, who was a little too snobby for her own good, right. But still you would forgive her. You just get a chance to kiss her, you know. Everyone had like the little nerdy David Silver, and there was always the do-gooder Brandon Walsh, you know. The characters were very easy to relate to because they were in every social environment within every school. But I think the fact that we dealt with issues that young adults were dealing with all over the world, really what made the show so successful.
How old was Steve Sanders as the character?
Steve's 10 years younger than me.
Wow, you're playing a 16-year-old kid at 26.
Yeah, I was playing a freshman in high school.
So how was that? Again, usually you might play older, but now you're playing younger.
Yeah, you know,
were there choices that you made to play, you know, going back to your high school years, or was it just not even really thought about?
It's so funny. My own personal academic career, I played a high school student on a soap opera for 2 years. I went back and played high school again. I'm like the oldest non-matriculating student in the world. You know, because the subject matter was, very topical, I could still relate to it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't too far off from what I was experiencing in my own life, aside from Hollywood and being in the entertainment industry. You know, my high school experiences were very similar to what we dealt with on the show. And, you know, my wardrobe, they put you in an environment, all of a sudden you adapt, you morph into... Mm-hmm. into that environment. If you go to a foreign country for a little bit of time, all of a sudden you start speaking the language. You know, when you immerse yourself in the environment, you become a part of it. And that's what the show did for all of us. We were all playing a little older, some a lot more older than the characters that we were playing. But, you know, it was believable enough for the audience because we all looked young enough.
I think it's like you said too. Auditions, it's they're looking for a certain look.
Yeah.
Not worried about age or, you know, height.
Got to be the right person for the part.
Yeah, exactly. So they probably wanted a little bit older because you're dealing with some very deep stuff.
Yeah.
So you have more life experience to play that off.
Yeah.
You know. Did you guys hang out quite a bit? Like, did you and Luke and
I had known Luke for years prior to 90210.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, he was doing. He was on a soap opera here while I was on Guiding Light. I think it was on As the World Turns or one of the other old soap operas.
You did Guiding Light?
Yeah. So I'd known Luke for many years before that. And meeting Jason and Shannon and Luke, Jason, Shannon, and Tori and Jenny and Brian, we would hang out a lot. We hung out on set all the time. You know, it was nice to go home, you know, at the end of the day, because we'd be together all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we would hang out a little bit socially, but for the most part, we're together all day long. Sometimes it's nice to just go home. But after 10 years, you become like a family.
Yeah. Do you still have relationships with them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jason and Luke, we hung out and had dinner. We were in Calgary, three of us together, a couple months ago.
To do what?
We were up there for a... pop culture comic
like
convention.
Yeah. So you guys go together?
That was the first time we all went together, and the fan turnout was really just so flattering. We took pictures for hours with, you know, people that would come and take pictures with us. It was just so nice, so flattering.
It's amazing, though, because, like, you know, you made such an impression. It's like the New Kids on the Block going to it, and they're selling out arenas, and people are like, what? But that's because you hold a special place in the heart.
Yeah.
You know, not to get too...
There's sentiment.
But the sentiment, right.
Like, yeah.
To see you guys together would be a blast, you know?
And we get it. Yeah. We get it. And, you know, we...
And that's important to you get it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not going to do that.
No, I get it. I geek out when I see people. Mm-hmm. There was someone, Gwendolyn from Game of Thrones, the tall, blonde female knight
Game
of Thrones. She was... I kind of geeked out, and then she got all squealy when she saw us, and it was so funny to see her fangirl out, and like the three of us were all geeking, oh my God, you're on Game of Thrones, and she's like, oh my gosh, I used to watch you when we at school, and blah, 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 blah.
You must get that all the time.
I was so tickled, you know, Rosario Dawson, like, got all flustered, because she used to watch 90210, and it's just, it's really... really nice.
How was it working with Aaron Spelling, one of the all-time greats?
Yeah, Aaron, one of the most prolific producers in the history of Hollywood.
Yeah.
He's got more hours produced on television than just about anybody. I mean, if you watched everything that he's done from beginning to end, it would take you months.
Charlie's Angels.
Oh, my God. Spelling, Goldberg. Yeah, there were so many...
Yeah.
Starsky and Hutch, come on, all this.
Basically, every hit show in the 70s, it was either Norman Lear or Aaron Spelling.
Yeah. And Aaron was a real family man. He treated us all like his kids. He was very supportive, very caring, would call us. He would call me if I did something that he liked. He would let me know. He very much would be there for us. And... you know, when he passed away, it was a very sad day for everyone who's known him because he was such a great guy, such
a
sweetheart.
As far as, you know, how to stay working in Hollywood, about how to...
No, there really wasn't much of that. It was just more that he was there nurturing and supportive and, you know, made himself accessible. If we had anything that we needed to discuss, I never thought twice about picking up the phone and talking to him.
It must have been kind of strange because was that Tori's first job?
Right? No, I think Tori had some other work prior to that. I think she may have been on a Love Boat or two.
Okay, that's another one.
Yeah,
Fantasy Island.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think she may have been involved in some of his work, but I think that this was her first consistent acting gig.
She did a great job.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sure she had a lot of people accusing nepotism or whatever.
And there probably was some of that at the start, but then she earned her stripes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I would do that for my kids. Would,
right.
I mean, what? There's no length too far for me to go for my... If I was a huge producer, believe me, I'd make my kids the stars of the show. Why wouldn't I?
What's your... do you have a favorite episode from Beverly Hills that stands out? Or
oh, man. There's one episode from the first season where Steve's car gets stolen. That was a lot of fun. We worked with Judy Aronson and Julie McCullough and Jason and I just had a blast filming that episode. It was just fun.
Yeah. So it went, you know, you mentioned, I'm just getting ready to wrap up here, but all the time in between Beverly Hills, huge hit, then Sharknado, huge hit.
Yeah.
You had so much work in between. Is Sharknado now leading to other opportunities? Like Ryan Ziering is back on the map.
It's work certainly begets more work.
That's right, yeah.
And
you're hot right now.
Well, you know, it's I'm very lucky right now. I always consider myself a journeyman actor, and so I understand that it's cyclical. There's always going to be ups, but where there's ups, there's downs. Every opening night has a closing curtain, and I'm very aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to do whatever I can to sustain the ups and prepare for the downs because it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to do things that stretch my repertoire a bit, to do things that challenge me, to do things that give me a sense of achievement. And now I just focus on things that will help me contribute to my family,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's really where my goals are, to be First, it was glory. I was motivated by the glory, doing commercials in high school. The chicks digged it. Yes. So the girl, the glory. And then as I got older, it was all about achievement, to do things that I hadn't done before.
Right.
I'd like to do that. I'd like to do this. Boy, that'd be great to do this. And now, now I find myself motivated by contribution, what I can give back to my family. Mm-hmm. What's this going to do for my lifestyle and my family? Yeah. What am I going to leave for my kids? How's this going to help me be a better dad or sustain the lifestyle that, you know, I want to provide for my family? Yeah.
Final question. How hard was it to train people that it's iron, not you?
I think they've been beaten into it long enough. You know, on The Apprentice last year, they... you know, they butchered it enough and finally said, hey, guys, it's Ian. You know, and Donald started calling me Ian, and the only person who really couldn't put it together was Geraldo, but that doesn't surprise me.
He's called Geraldo.
Yeah, Gerald Dildo is what I ended up calling him because he's such a prick. Anyway, sorry if I've offended anybody. But
I've had that too. My last name is Irvin, I-R-V-I-N-E. My whole life I've had to grow up with Chris Irvine. No, it's Irvin. Irvine. No, it's Irvin. But it's spelled like Irvine.
Yeah.
No, but it's pronounced Irvin. And then my kids are going through the same thing, you know?
Right.
You always have to worry about that. You must have put that through your whole kid,
the child. I've been called a lot worse than Ian. So there are worse things I've discovered to be called. And you know what? It's just really what separates my friends and family from acquaintances and people that are just, that don't know me.
What's the background? Is that like a...
Creative mother.
Oh, hippie mother.
I was named after my grandfather, Irving. And with the I, my mom found it difficult to find the right name. She didn't want to name me Irving.
Mm-hmm.
But she liked Ian. My brothers had a counselor in camp when they were young. His name was Ian. And my mom liked that. So she named me Ian. So Ian I am. Since birth, it's always just been Ian. But it's not the norm.
No, it's
not. You know, there's a lot of Ians out there. So,
Ian.
And it's nice. People know my name's Ian. I'm not correcting people as much as.
You have celebrity status.
Right.
They know it's Ian.
I'm getting somewhere, Mom. I'm getting somewhere. They know my name's Ian. It's so, so satisfying now. It's, you know, it's. When I was little, it would be, no, it's Ian, not Ian. But what do you mean? You're pronouncing your name wrong.
Exactly.
You can relate. I mean, it's like, look, this is what they name me.
You're 5 or 6 years old. It's like, I know what my name is.
Yeah.
It's not that.
You can call me whatever you want because I don't really care about you enough to really let it bother me.
Right.
So whatever. But it's Ian.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm not going to tell you again.
It's Ian here. It's Finn, Sharknado 3. Dude, it's great to talk to you, man.
You're an awesome guy. I tell you, I really enjoy talking to you and seeing your success. I would have loved to see you on the video show, America's Funniest Videos. But
Oh, yeah.
Chris, I got a feeling there's something even bigger in store for you. Where one door doesn't open, there's others that do. So I'm looking
forward to seeing
your next opening night, buddy.
And thanks for the advice.
And you're still ripping, bro. Look at the size of you. No, man. You're the one who doesn't fit in your jet. You're just so... The people who are listening to this don't realize how muscular and in shape this monster of a man is. You're a testament to health and fitness, buddy.
Oh, stop. Say more.
Yeah,
stop.
No. Take care, man.
Thanks to Ian Ziering. Sharknado 3, Oh Hell No, debuts Wednesday, July 22nd on the Sci-Fi Channel. Loaded with celebrity cameos, including Mark Cuban as the President of the United States, David Hasselhoff and Bo Derek are in this one, and of course, so am I. Bruce the Ride Attendant, ready to run wild on them crazy sharks on Wednesday, July 22nd. You gotta check it out on the Sci-Fi Channel if you want to see the fate of my character, Bruce the Ride Attendant. You're going to love it. I'm telling you, it's a fun movie, and it's going to be huge, man. Talking about huge as well, the Y2J WWE Summer Tour is kind of over halfway done. It's crazy. I can't believe it. There's been some adjustments. I just found out this week that some of the shows that I was supposed to do aren't happening anymore. So San Diego, July 31st, August 1st, Ontario, California, August 2nd, Fresno, August 15th, Detroit. The East Lansing show has been moved, so there will be no East Lansing show on August 16th. August 21st in Bridgeport, August 22nd, the White Plains show has been moved, so there will be no show that day. 29th in San Juan, Puerto Rico, 30th in Tallahassee. Wrapping it all up, although I might be doing some more dates. I will announce those very soon. and other Fozzy dates, July 24th at the Square in Kitchener, August 8th, Festival of Friends in Hamilton, Ontario, August 9th in Heavy Montreal in Montreal, then of course October 30th, we are going to be rocking the Kiss Cruise with the Kiss Navy. Excited about that. Talk about a dream come true, touring with Kiss people. Love it. And then we head back to Europe in November, and we're going to the UK as well. And that starts November 14th at Augsburg, Germany, 15 Vienna, Austria, 17 Hamburg, 18 Berlin, 19 Ludwigsburg in Germany. We got Voreil, France. We got a show in Luxembourg on the 21st, Cologne, and then we head to the UK on the 24th, Reading, Tunbridge, Wells, London, Manchester, Chester, Birmingham, Cambridge, Newcastle, Nottingham, Sheffield, Treco Bay up in Wales for Planet Rockstock. So many shows coming up. Go to FozzyRock.com and get your tickets early. They're going fast. Get your VIPs early. Those are going fast. And thanks for checking it out. Thanks for being here. And thanks to all of you for supporting this show. Without you, I wouldn't be able to do it for free for twice a week. And thanks to the great Talk is Jericho sponsors, DDP Yoga, Recovery Max, True Car, and of course, the sponsors have been with us from the start, Amazon. Easiest way to support this show is use my links when you go pick up, when you go shopping, and you're going to pick up, let's say, Randy Bly's new book, Dark Days. Great, great show with Randy Bly the other day. Man, one of my favorite episodes. And I want to make a quick apology. I was saying Czechoslovakia the whole time. I know it's now called the Czech Republic, and Czechoslovakia does not exist anymore. My bad. I apologize for that. I know it's the Czech Republic, so please stop messaging me about that now. I'm sorry. But go check out Dark Days. It's a great book. And so is Corey Taylor's book, You're Making Me Hate You, A Cantankerous Look at the Common Misconception that Humans Have Any Common Sense Left. Or go pick up the first two Sharknado movies on DVD. How about the new Tremonti album, Cauterize? Anything you want or need on Amazon, you help out Talk is Jericho in the process. Just go to podcast1.com. Click on the support or sponsors banner at the top of the page. Hit Talk is Jericho. I got the Amazon links in the USA, the UK, and the Canada A. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show. So we keep doing this to you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done, helping us out in the process. All right. I thank you very much for being here. Thanks to Ian Ziering and thanks to Randy Bly. It's been a great, great week here on Talk is Jericho. And we're just continuing along next Wednesday. The quality continues as we got Global Force Wrestling's Jeff Jarrett and Magnus are going to be here talking all about the upcoming debut of GFW, the TV tapings, how it came together, how Magnus left TNA and ended up with Global Force Wrestling, and of course Jeff Jarrett, how he is now a third generation CEO of a wrestling company. Great, great conversation with Jeff and Magnus coming up on Wednesday, and we will see you then. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.